May it please the court. My name is Jonathan Robbins, and I represent the respondent appellant, Russell Stover Candies, and its workers' compensation carrier Travelers Council. With me today is Gregory Plank. The issue before the court is fairly simple. Was the administrative law judge correct when he decided, based upon his viewing of the evidence and listening to the testimony of the witnesses, correct in ruling that the respondents had proven that the claimant willfully violated the employer's safety rule? Or is the Industrial Claim Appeals Office, was the Industrial Claims Appeals Office correct when it relayed the ALJ's findings, when it substituted its judgment for the ALJ, and when it abdicated its function as a neutral arbiter in overruling the administrative law judge's decision? The ALJ was able to view the evidence as a whole, and taken as a whole in the record, made a determination that the respondents had proven Ms. Strait violated the employer's safety rule of not stepping on a pallet, and that caused her injury. The judge's decision was not based upon one piece of evidence, as appears to be the reasoning, the raison d'etre, that the Industrial Claims Appeal Office decided to reverse Administrative Law Judge Mottram's decision. They found in their order that the only substantial evidence was presented by claimant's supervisor, Mr. Mike Picardi, when he, in a post-accident interview of the claimant, asked her, "You know you're not supposed to stand on the pallet." And his testimony was that she said, "Yes, I know." Claimant's testimony was that she followed that up with, "And I did not step on the pallet." However, that was not the only piece of evidence that the administrative law judge based his decision on. Again, the record taken as a whole provides substantial evidence to support his finding of an intentional violation. That other evidence includes an eyewitness's testimony, Mr. Dave Schneider, who was there helping the claimant perform her job to put tubs of candy onto a pallet. Mr. Schneider, in turn, would put a pallet jack into the pallet, and then when the tubs were fully loaded onto the pallet, he would move the pallet out of the way. He testified that he saw from about 3 feet away the claimant step on the pallet, and that's what caused her to fall. The claimant at the hearing testified repeatedly that she did not step on the pallet. She gave several different versions of what happened during the course of the incident that caused her to fall. However, she was very clear that none of those situations involved her stepping on the pallet. One version was that she stepped on the pallet jack. One version was that she stepped on the tongs of the pallet jack when they were outside the other end of the pallet. She was very clear, however, that she did not step on the pallet. Judge Mottram was able to assess the claimant's credibility, as well as the witnesses that respondents tendered, and make a determination that, based upon the totality of the evidence, the claimant, in fact, did step on the pallet and did so knowingly.
Stravis, can I interrupt you here? I don't want to go too far down the road.
Sure.
I don't think there's any question here. The panel affirmed the finding she stepped on the pallet.
That's what I was doing.
We have that. The issue is willfulness. Best as I can understand it, and I spent a lot of time trying to decipher both the ALJ's ruling and the panel's ruling, there were two bases for the ALJ's finding here that it was willful. And they're both inferences. Made an inference from the fact that when the supervisor said, "You know we got a safety rule," she said, "Yes, I do." And then she didn't volunteer. I did step on the pallet. That's one. And then the ALJ relied on the fact that her testimony was confused, or I forgot what language he used. And from the second, the ALJ says, it's pretty clear to me, she doesn't know what happened. And she herself said that. It happened so fast. I mean, that was the language, you know, she testified to. My question to you is, and I think for me what this turns on is, were those inferences reasonable? And I guess I'd like you to address that. So why is it reasonable to infer she did it willfully when she answered the question she got asked, didn't volunteer a question, answer that she wasn't asked, and say more? I mean, there's an assumption here that when asked, the supervisor didn't say, you know, "I think you stepped on the pallet," or asked the question directly, which would have been natural. He didn't just say, "You know we have a rule, right?" She says, "Yes, I do." Then she just was a little confused maybe as to what happened, because I think Probably she didn't know because it happened fast. How do we infer willful conduct from that? You talked about Mr. Schneider. Mr. Schneider went no further than I saw her step on the pallet and was asked the question, you know, essentially, you know, do you know what willful or whatever? I don't know. How do those inferences get us there?
Obviously, I would have preferred Mr. Picardi to make that next question.
Sure.
You know, we're presented the facts and evidence as we have as trial attorneys, and we have to work with what we get. I think it's important to sort of first address the inferential issue in that we're not required to have the claimant show up in, for example, a criminal case and make a confession. I did it, I stepped on the pallet, I did it knowingly and willfully. It's going to be the rare case that we ever get that, if ever. That never happens. So the case law allows us to prove willfulness based upon circumstantial evidence of claimant's state of mind. That's sufficient to uphold the imposition of a penalty. And inferential evidence as well. So what Administrative Law Judge Matron had to work with was the inferences to be drawn from the question that Mr. Picardi asked the claimant, from the fact that Mr. Schneider saw the claimant step on the pallet, and then, although the claimant's testimony was disjointed about how the accident happened, she consistently said, "I did not step on the pallet." So I think it's a reasonable inference. It's a reasonable inference for the ALJ to then draw, putting all those factors and pieces of the puzzle together, that it's sort of like the post-hearing argument that we made at the hearing. This is a person who had their hearing caught in the cookie jar. And now they're saying, "That wasn't me. I didn't take the cookie."
But that may get you
a reasonable inference for the judge to then draw that I didn't step on the pallet in any way, shape, or form. We have an eyewitness showing that you did. You didn't deny stepping on the pallet, which would be reasonable when Mr. Picardi asked you about it. So therefore, you must have known what you were doing. You knew it was against the rule, and you violated the rule.
And I was with you up until the last thing you said. I think reasonably infer from here, she was trying to deny. She stepped on the pallet. She stepped on the pallet. My problem is, and I guess the question is, what does it take to prove an inference is reasonable? And is it enough if you have two equally reasonable inferences? I think the other side is going to say it is equally reasonable to assume she stepped on the pallet and it was an accident. Mr. Schneider said he probably stepped on it. The supervisor said, "I probably have done it by accident myself." There was evidence people step on pallets accidentally. I'm just not sure how we get to it, but trouble a little bit, how we get to knowing that, or that it's reasonable it wasn't an accident.
Sure, Judge. And had the claimant testified as most claimants do, this was mere forgetfulness or negligence, or I just did it to help me do my job, we wouldn't be here. But in denying from the get-go ever stepping on the pallet, that's a reasonable inference that the ALJ drew, and that's an inference that the ICAO should have left alone in its function as the neutral arbiter of the facts. That is a reasonable inference that the ALJ can draw. In other words, the flip side of that has to be that evidence is incredible as a matter of law, that it violates the nature, the laws of physics and human nature for the ALJ to say, based upon the totality of the evidence, deny stepping on pallet, eyewitness saw you stepping on pallet, didn't deny stepping on the pallet. That doesn't equal a reasonable inference to them for the ALJ to then draw. You knew what you were doing, and you're simply denying that. And that's your story, and you're sticking to it. Otherwise, as a trial attorney, one of the reasons we took this case up on appeal is this sets up a very dangerous precedent in workers' compensation to where all the claimant has to do, "I didn't do it on purpose." We'll never prove a safety violation, ever. And therefore, again, it is our position that based upon the totality of the evidence, not just the statement that the question Mr. Picardi asked the claimant, you know you're not supposed to step on pallets, "Yes, I know," without the follow-up, "And I did it on purpose." Well, she didn't admit stepping on the pallet, and in fact, in her testimony said, she followed up that with, "I didn't step on the pallet." How can we ever prove? It would be very difficult to ever prove by direct evidence. All we're left with is circumstantial or inferential evidence. And again, taken as a whole, which is what I think the ICAO did not do here, they focused on Mr. Picardi's interaction with the claimant. Taken as a whole, there is substantial evidence that is not incredible as a matter of law, that is reasonable to draw from the facts and circumstances that were presented, and based upon the ALJ's assessment of credibility and the weight given to the evidence, the ICAO should not have stepped in and reweighed that evidence, substituted its judgment for that of the ALJ's, and said, "Well, it's equally plausible that it was, or it's equally plausible that it wasn't." That's not their job. The ALJ makes that determination.
But the job, and you said a couple times, they and I would agree with you, as a matter of law, they can't substitute their judgment, but they do get to review to see if there's substantial evidence in the record to support the ALJ's finding, correct?
They do, and again, what they were presented with here was not just Mr. Picardi's interaction with the claimant. It was the claimant denying every time she was asked, I did not step on the pallet. And that then gave, in my opinion, the ALJ it's a reasonable inference for the ALJ to draw from that statement. I didn't do it. When I wouldn't have said you did, I'm going to take that to mean you knew what you were doing. It was on purpose, and you're simply denying it. Therefore, we've established willfulness. It can be established by circumstantial evidence. That's, in most of these cases, all we have to work with as trial attorneys, and we would therefore observe my remaining time, but would ask that the court reverse the ICAO and reinstate the ALJ's opinion.
All right. Thank you. A little over 4 minutes remaining.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Erin Burke, and I represent claimant Maria Strait in this workers' compensation case. My bar number is 41813. This case stems from an accident that Maria Strait had at work. Maria worked a fast-paced job in a confined space inspecting candy at the factory. She tripped and broke her arm. This is a sort of injury that the Workers' Compensation Act was intended to compensate. Respondents had the burden to prove that Maria stepped on a pallet, that she did so willfully, and that she did so with the intention of violating the factory safety rule. Respondents did not meet this burden, and the ALJ's finding that they did was not supported by substantial evidence. As such, it was properly reversed by ICAP, and claimant requests that you uphold ICAP's determination. I'd like to address my colleague's discussion of the danger of allowing no safety violations if the claimant didn't do it on purpose. And I think the distinctive factor here is the type of injury and the type of violation at hand. The courts have inferred willfulness from acts prior that could not be done unintentionally, where even if the claimant testified, I didn't mean to do that, the act itself belied that allegation. The Supreme Court's case on the matter, Bennett, was a case where the janitor entered the elevator chamber without having told a supervisor who was supposed to watch for the descending elevator cabs. And the court stated that he could not have done that unintentionally, and that you can infer willfulness, and it wouldn't have mattered what he testified to. He did that intentionally. Another case cited by respondents was the Johnson v. Tramway case, in which the engineer was required to yield a follow a dispatcher said he had to pull over his train to yield the tracks to an oncoming train, and he didn't do so when there was no testimony why, because the claimant was killed in that case. And even though the act of choosing not to pull over a train is much more deliberate than a misstep in a factory, the court still found that it could have been done with thoughtfulness, forgetfulness, or negligence, and so that they haven't shown willful. So the court.
So is the standard here that if it could have been by an accident, that's not sufficient as a matter of law? I guess what I'm asking you is address Mr. Robbins' very forceful argument here that the ALJ made a lot of findings and made inferences from the facts. It sounds to me that you're arguing if it's potentially could have been an accident and as a matter of law, we would have to reverse, that that's not sufficient. And I guess I'm concerned that rule may be a little too broad.
I think the inverse of that rule is true. If it could not have been done accidentally, you can infer intent. I'm not arguing that if it could have been an accident, it automatically was an accident. I think the ALJ's finding is important that he said either she's trying to deny stepping on it or she doesn't know what she stepped on. And if she doesn't know what she stepped on, she can still say, I didn't step on a pallet, because she doesn't have knowledge to the contrary. And the eyewitness was not as strong as came across on my colleague's argument up until the trial testimony. And even within his hearing testimony, he kind of waffled until basically redirect until it came out the first time and said, I saw her step on the pallet. First, it was, I saw the pallet move, I saw her falling. It wasn't always clear until towards the end of the hearing that he was suddenly an eyewitness firmly saying, I saw her foot step on the pallet. And the ALJ did acknowledge that testimony, but he also said she maybe doesn't know what she stepped on. And in that case, I don't think it's improper for her to say, I didn't step on it. If she doesn't know what she stepped on, I don't think that that makes the fact that she says, I didn't step on it when an eyewitness says she did, I don't think that automatically means she's lying about it and she meant to.
So is your argument that the ALJ's own finding that she probably didn't know what happened precludes an inference that it was intentional or willful?
I do believe that the claimant doesn't know what happened. How could she have done it and done it willfully?
So in this case, what I'm just making sure I understand, what distinguishes this case from, you know, just generically where an ALJ makes findings and inferences, I think you're arguing to us that the ALJ's own findings undermine the inference that he made.
They do undermine the inference he made, and thus, I think, limit us to looking at his more express inferences, and that he did find that she was hard to follow and she was not credible, because he also added she probably doesn't know what she stepped on. I think we can't assume that his ruling was based on the fact that she denied stepping on it. I think we have to look at his express inference, which was the two-sentence exchange with Mr. Picardy. And I think making such an inference from there is just unreasonable. It becomes a mere guess or a possibility, which is not a reasonable inference. That, you know, counsel says it would have been natural for Ms. Strait to deny at that point, to offer additional information that wasn't solicited. And counsel doesn't know what would be natural for anyone to say. I think that that is going too far. And I think that reverse inference can certainly be drawn. Mr. Picardy didn't follow up and say, well, did you step on it? Or he didn't write her up. He didn't say, I believe you stepped on it. She wasn't even, didn't have a safety violation at work. This was a non-issue until the insurance company used it as a means to cut off her benefits. They didn't make anything more of it at the time than Mr. Picardy asking if she knew the rule, and she said, yes, I do, and they walked away. I think you could make the inference that, well, they must have thought she didn't do it if nothing more came of that. But rather than making inferences from non-actions and non-statements, that just becomes too dangerous, and we have to look at the evidence that was before the judge, and I think it was insufficient.
Ms. Burke, let me just ask you, because we're talking about the second issue of her statements after the fact and whether the court can make an inference therefrom, and then before we were talking about the court may have made contradictory findings. So are we looking at the totality of the circumstances, or can we separate that each out and each didn't support an inference, or do we look at it combined and whether that would support an inference?
I think we have to look at what the ALJ actually expressly found, which was fairly limited, and address were those reasonable inferences. And because respondents have argued that the totality of the circumstances, that the ALJ watched the entire hearing, that is what he considered, we do have to take what we know of what he made of that. And he did expressly state she probably doesn't know what she stepped on. And he did have the benefit of sitting through the entire hearing, listening to her testimony. And if he made a finding regarding that, I think we have to consider that. And his finding was she might not know what she stepped on. So we have to look at, because respondents are arguing that it's all of the evidence, not just his express findings, and thus they've argued that judge does not have to make a finding on everything considered, we do have to look at what she said. But because he did make an express finding about her testimony and about what she must have been thinking or been testifying to, then that is important to consider.
About the argument that this sets a dangerous precedent, how does anybody ever prove that it's willful if in this case the claimant had said, yes, I stepped on it, but I didn't do it willfully? How do you ever prove?
I think then you can take claimant's testimony and have contrary testimony from coworkers. If they said it's virtually impossible to step on a pallet unless you wanted to, that would be one thing. Every coworker testified said they've stepped on pallets accidentally. It's a small environment. It can happen in a second. I think claimant had never been written up for this. And the most important factor of this particular workplace injury and the safety violation is she derived no benefit from it. If you look at the other safety violations that have made case law, there's some benefit out of not fastening your seatbelt or if it's uncomfortable, or not going to get your supervisor before you do something because that takes time, or wearing your safety equipment because it's cumbersome. Here, there's zero benefit that she derived of stepping on a pallet. In fact, whatever she stepped on, she fell and broke her arm, and this didn't make her job faster, easier. She had nothing to gain from stepping on it. So that is powerful evidence. If you have a claimant saying, I didn't mean to, and respondents want to address that, you can look at, have they violated it before? What benefit is there? Why is this rule in place? How easy is it to accidentally do it? And the courts have also looked at just the actual act. Can it be done in a split second? The Stockdale case cited by respondents, there was a bridge that was off limits, and the claimant drove his horse and buggy across it, and it was off limits because it wasn't safe, and the bridge collapsed. And that's an intentional act. You can't accidentally find yourself driving across a bridge. But claimant was moving about the factory. She was loading up the pallets and the tubs of candy and moving them onto the pallet. She's back and forth on her feet all day. I think you can look at the act itself with all the other evidence that there's no benefit derived from it. She had no history of violating it. The other coworkers said this happens. It can happen in a nanosecond, that could have been not willful. I don't think it's the case where if the employee says, I didn't mean to do it, that it's open and shut. I do think that respondent's argument that if the claimant knew the rule and she did it anyway, that opens the door for every workplace accident becoming a safety violation and every claimant loses half their benefits. I think that there's an equal danger of going too far on the other side. If all you have to show is that you knew the rule and you did it anyway, it's done, and you've shown willfulness, I think that can turn all accidents which were intended for compensation to be reduced as well. I would like to reserve the remaining time for my colleague unless there's any other questions.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Alice Hosley. I'm here on behalf of the Industrial Claim Appeals Office. My registration is 32195. Judge Gabriel, I'd like to address your point when you asked if there's an equally reasonable inference. And I would like to respond to that. And in this case, there's not an equally reasonable inference. The inference the ALJ made was not reasonable. There was no other testimony. There was no other evidence presented on as far as intentional. So I don't think that other than this inference of her conversation with Mr. Picardi, the eyewitness who testified, I don't know if it was intentional. So I just don't think it is reasonable. And I understand we disagree. So this is ultimately up to you. But the argument that's being made is that if somebody denies an action, not only can we infer that they did that action, but we can infer they did it willfully. And I just don't think we can go there. And I understand that reasonable minds can differ, but I wanted to clarify that this is not the panel stepping in and substituting its judgment for an equally reasonable inference. The inference, in our opinion, and our position is the inference that the ALJ made was unreasonable.
So let me just ask you, as a legal principle,
sure,
rule, if hypothetically,
yes,
there were reasonable inferences going two ways, would the panel defer to the ALJ in that situation?
Absolutely. But it is the panel's responsibility to make sure there is substantial evidence to support the ALJ's findings. If there isn't, if they don't find that there's substantial evidence, and the panel referred to the ALJ's statement, they looked at the record as a whole. So they went back and looked at the record as a whole, said, where is there any inference? Where is there any evidence as to the willfulness? Aside from, and they said, I think they made that point clear for the first statement. The ALJ made the credibility finding that the claimant was not credible. When she denied stepping on it, they determined credibility on that. That was direct. They make that finding. That is up to them. We can't put our own, substitute our judgment for that. However, for the second piece, there was not that same support. And it is their job, and it is not usurping their power. That is what they're supposed to do, exactly, is to make sure there are findings that support it. It is their opinion that it was not a reasonable inference. And they went back and looked at the record as a whole. They went and searched for something that this intention could be, that you could hang the hat on intention. And I think what they found is exactly what you pointed to, was the ALJ, the ALJ's comments was, well, it's more likely than not. So this isn't a direct finding as it was willful. It was, you know, 50.1% maybe. And also the fact that the ALJ made findings that her testimony was all over the place, and she probably didn't know if she stepped on her or not. So I think the panel did exactly what the design is for this review. I think they did exactly, and I don't think we have to worry about this setting off a parade of horribles that there can never be an intentional violation. That is a credibility determination. When people state, I did it on accident, I didn't do it on purpose, that is a determination that can be made. The credibility of their testimony on that can be addressed. And that would be up for the ALJ to make that finding. And they are the ones hearing that testimony. They can make that credibility determination. This is what happens all the time. Intentional was put into it. The willful intent was put in for a reason. We're not reading this in. It's there for a reason, and their burden is there for a reason, and they simply didn't need it in this case. Yes, you can make inferences. The cases have shown, have discussed what the proper inferences can be. Those are in my brief. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. To be clear, based on the Bennett case, which is a 1968 Colorado Supreme Court case, the Bennett Properties case, respondents are not required to present direct evidence concerning the claimant's state of mind or prove the claimant had the rule in mind when they did the prohibited act. Rather, a willful violation may be inferred from evidence the claimant knew the safety rule and did the prohibited act. The evidence in this case shows the claimant knew the safety rule. The evidence in this case shows that ALJ Mottram determined she did the prohibited act. It wasn't clear, based upon claimant's testimony, what happened, but the ALJs are not held to a crystalline standard in their orders. What the ALJ found was that she stepped on the pallet and then, when asked about it, effectively lied about it.
Just want to make sure I have the law right. And Bennett, as I recall, cited Stockdale. And Stockdale, as I recall, says that the employee knows the rule and yet intentionally did the act. I mean, you left out the word intentionally. I don't think, but correct me, that it's enough just to know the rule and then do it. I think you still have to prove they intentionally did it.
The intent can be proven by inference, Your Honor.
Sure.
And that is because, again, it's the rare case when we'll have the claimant making a confession of what happened. And so the ALJs have to be able to make reasonable inferences drawn from the record. And I haven't heard, and I didn't see in today or see any of the briefs that were filed by claimant or the ICAO, an explanation as to why ALJ Mottram's decision to infer, based upon the claimant's denial of stepping on the pallet, that she did it intentionally or knowingly is unreasonable.
What about, if you were to respond to Ms. Burke's argument, the ALJ himself said, I think she didn't know what happened. Isn't the only reasonable inference from that? If he does, he himself says, I don't think she knew what happened. How could he find willful?
Not at all, Your Honor. In workers' compensation cases, the standard there on appeal, as cited in many, many ICAO cases, is that the ALJ can credit some, all, or none of a witness's testimony. So in one respect, the ALJ may say, based on his testimony, it doesn't appear the claimant knew what was going on here, how she felt, what happened. But the ALJ also said that the claimant either did not know how she felt or did not want to admit that she stepped on a pallet. So the ALJ can discredit, can comment on testimony that a witness gave, and then throw that out and say, based upon this, based upon the eyewitness's account of what happened, based upon the claimant denying that she stepped on a pallet, I am going to draw that inference that we're allowed to draw, a reasonable inference that You stepped on the pallet, you knew the rule, you knew you weren't supposed to step on the pallet, you denied stepping on the pallet every time you were asked, therefore that's willful. That's intentional.
Mr. Robbins, let me just ask you this. If you may accept or reject all or part of the witness's testimony, there was no testimony here as to intent. And so so it's one step removed. I mean, the court could accept or reject the testimony whether she stepped on the pallet. And I know that the court can make reasonable inferences from the evidence. Would it matter what the type of incident is? Because I believe Ms. Burke referred to when somebody's driving across a bridge, the nature of that incident, one could infer an intentional act. And in this case, we have perhaps an accidental stepping on a pallet or not. So does the nature of the incident play a role?
Judge Lichtenstein? Uh-huh. I'm going to try that. I apologize if I butchered
right.
it. It can, but again, typically in that situation, you have a claimant who will say, mere forgetfulness, negligence, didn't mean to do it, hurting in my job, all the things that counsel pointed out could have happened in this case, but didn't. And that's why we have to have the latitude, the ALJs have to have the latitude, or else it'll be impossible to prove a safety violation, to make reasonable inferences. And again, going back to the evidence that we're presented with, that we gave to the court, is all we have to work with. And here, as is many times in a safety violation case, there is no confession. So all we have are inferences. And no one's explained yet, and I haven't seen in the briefs or argument today, as to why the ALJ's decision to make a reasonable inference based upon the claimant's denial of stepping on the pallet, leading to intent, didn't equal willfulness or intent on her part. We therefore ask you to reverse the ICAO and reinstate ALJ Mottram's decision. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. So that concludes.